This book completes a sort of unintended trilogy, following earlier books, Being Christian, and Being Disciples. It is less about the basics of Christian belief and behaviour, and more about the sort of questions in our culture that make us wonder what real humanity is like, and whether our most central ideas about what is human are under threat in this environment. As these chapters suggest, there are grounds for being a bit concerned about our current models of human life and human well-being. No need to panic, but if we are to think and act in a way that helps to make the world more rather than less human and humane, we do need more clarity than our culture usually gives us as to what we think is more human. So the chapters of this book examine some sources of contemporary confusion and outline some of the characteristics that we might look for in human lives when they are in touch with or in alignment with the grace and joy of what is ultimately true, with God and with the will of God, as Christians would say. These pieces are a bit more demanding in some ways than most of the shorter talks collected in the earlier books, so it may help to give a quick sketch of each chapter to draw out the main arguments. Chapter 1 looks at the question of what we understand by being conscious and self-conscious. A lot of popular scientific literature these days encourages us to think of the mind as a machine, or the brain as a computer, or whatever. But it's impossible to think consistently about being conscious without reference to our locality in a material world, without a sense of narrative, the story of a self, and without factoring in our relationships and our language. So, what is a person in the light of all this? Chapter 2 tries to suggest some answers. A person is not simply another object, and not something whose presence or absence we can decide just by applying a set of objective criteria. Persons are more than individuals. They are both spiritual and material. And their uniqueness is fulfilled in community, not in isolation and total independence. And if we ask what it means to say that a person is both spiritual and material, we are in the territory covered by Chapter 3, which looks at body-mind relations in the light of some of the recent scientific discussions of left brain and right brain functions, and the complex role of the body in what we call thinking. We think with our bodies because we have to learn how to find our way in a world of bodies. And this should make us wary of any picture of our humanity that isolates it or imagines our human knowing as being like beams from a lighthouse playing over a world of passive stuff, rather than being a process of rich interweaving of stimulus and imagining, worked out in and through bodies. We are very much in love these days with the idea of autonomy, self-direction, the independent control of our environment. Chapter 4 looks at the ways in which religious faith helps us understand how we can be dependent without humiliation, as it also helps us deal with the educating of our instincts and passions, with the passing of time and the acceptance of our mortality. Part of the good news that faith offers is the realization that learning to depend on God and to live with, not in opposition to, our limits in time and the body, is something that increases our freedom rather than reducing it. And this means that in our life and our prayer, we do not have to be afraid of letting go of the need to be in charge, to be explaining and organizing all the time. As Chapter 5 suggests, human beings who have grown into their full freedom will be at home with silence and openness before God, which is also why good worship is worship that takes us beyond the urge to explain and manage, and leads us to take the time we need to open up to the endless richness of divine life that has been offered to us through the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. In fact, we are brought back to the basics of belief again, to the conviction that to understand properly what our humanity really is, we need to look to Jesus. The book ends with a sermon about the ascension of Jesus as a sign that all the diverse aspects of human experience, including its darkest moments, are capable of being taken up and transfigured in the action of Jesus Christ.